brought to you by Buck Roofing. Sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. 913-384-2680 or rbuckroofing.com. And by Boulevard Brewing Company. Make this a season of great beer with Boulevard Brewing Company. Boulevard Brewing Company, Kansas City's beer.
Okay, college football fans, your time is now. Sports Radio 810 WHB now presents College Game Day with Danny Klingscale and Stan Weber.
Good morning, Mid-America, and welcome to another edition of College Football Game Day on the last day of regular season football. There'll be bowl games for some. There'll be championship games for a few. And there'll be nothing for quite a few teams as well. That doesn't mean that today is insignificant, and in many ways it's super significant for people. We had a big day of football on Friday, and we'll get to break down games instead of preview them a little bit here. We will be able to preview, obviously, the Kansas Jayhawks, who play later today in Lawrence. And that coverage will come your way starting at 4:30 right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Little note there. Of course, David Lawrence will be a big part of that, and he is the subject of the Kansas City Profile presented by Easton Roofing at DannyKlingscale.com. We'll get into a couple Danny Klingscale notes as time goes on. Stan Weber and I will be doing a lot of conversing about the day of football today, the day of football yesterday, and football to come. And that should be very, very interesting. He is on the road back from Austin, Texas. And Stan, how's life out on the road right now?
Well, Danny, appropriate for the show, I should say, Stan Weber reporting on site from Stillwater, Oklahoma, where Bedlam tonight is very important. The Big 12 conference play, national championship hopes, because the Oklahoma Sooners are underdogs getting ready to play Oklahoma State. Danny, yes. I'm very near Stillwater. It's only appropriate, completely accidental, but it feels good talking about it, right, with the big game. I mean, it is sunny and beautiful. You and I love talking about how football weather kind of always seems to be good as long as it's not raining and snowing on people. But it's been amazing this month of November, hasn't it? I mean, just good weather all over the country, and here we're going to have a lot of that across the country again today. It is sunny and beautiful here in Stillwater, Oklahoma, where there's a big focus on football, but great to be with you, Danny. It's a great weekend, starting with Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, so much fun and football. Friday, I've always loved it, maybe because we grew up in the Midwest and Oklahoma versus Nebraska was a national championship type of game. It seemed like every year, right, and traditionally it was played there. So anytime you get a play on that Friday or see those games, I really enjoy it, and you still have Saturday, Sunday, and Monday to go. So big time, and Arkansas, Missouri may not be noticed by that many people in the country. Nebraska and Iowa, it's nothing like Nebraska and Oklahoma, right? I mean, it's nothing like that. But yet, I still like watching those four teams play each other in those two games every year. K-State joined with the Longhorns for the second year in a row. Texas played an 11 o'clock kickoff on Friday, this time against K-State. So a lot of football has been played. A ton of football is left today to finish off the regular season and then on into playoff, I mean, next week, championship games in the conferences, figuring out who's going to play in the college football playoffs. A lot going on, Danny, so it's going to be fun to talk about it.
Well, we have two full hours, and Stan and I, we got no guests today. We decided we were just going to keep the slate clean and talk a lot of football. That leaves us time to do silly things like this. Stillwater's what, about 30 miles down the road off the interstate? Is that about right, Stan? After
I think that's right, but right. Probably 20, 25.
But anyway, here's my two distinct memories for me of Stillwater, and they have nothing to do with actually the game of football or the game of basketball, although they're kind of indirectly related. On consecutive years, UMKC, when I was doing their games, played at Stillwater. And we had the distinct pleasure of staying in a Holiday Inn that was right next to a pig farm. And in fact, it was downwind from a pig farm, and it was also one of those hotels where the air is brought in from the outside through the heating and cooling system. So I spent a couple of days just basking in the glow of pig farm fumes, Stan. That's pretty delightful.
That is like a appropriate discussion point right here, because I know a little bit about real estate, and one of the things that people are talking about right now is the most environmentally friendly thing to do, with new concerns about COVID and airborne issues with disease, is we need more and more and more fresh air from the outside. That's the solution. You get more and more right. air from the outside to mix. And there's basically a standard, a law in most places that 10% of the air needs to be from the outside. And when you mix it in, it's very hard to get the humidity out of it. It's very hard to cool it or heat it. It costs a lot of money. So building owners would love to say, I'm not bringing in any fresh air. Okay, that would be an easy answer. But you need to bring in about 10%, unless it's just really freezing cold, something like that. So that's normal. That's healthy. But with this new environmental look that we have with disease control, we're all learning and studying and wondering, should we bring in more? So that is one of the solutions, is can you bring in more and more fresh air from the outside and still not have you sitting there sweating at your office desk or freezing, because it's hard for the HVAC control system to temper the air, get the humidity out, et cetera. Okay? So, Danny, they may have been environmentally friendly right there at Oklahoma State, the ag school. Maybe they were letting in like 15% fresh air so you could be healthy. But the smell might have came with it. So welcome to Agricultural University, Oklahoma State, Danny. And how about that for some current events? Did you like that?
I did like that. And the other memory is that it's red clay country there. And, of course, I was a daily runner then. And what I remember as well is going out for my morning run and running, 6-7 miles or whatever, and coming back and looking down, and my shoes were all red. Because there's a whole bunch of clay around there, even just stuff that blows onto the street. I was running on the sidewalks in the street, and it was still red clay all over my running shoes.
Yeah, I know. I thought about that today, because part of driving from Texas to Oklahoma, it is basically, the Red River rivalry, going back to football, played in Dallas, Texas, which is almost within 10 miles of the equal distance from Austin to Dallas to Dallas to Norman. And I was driving that way, and there's just major highway construction projects going on. They're trying to put new highways in, and so you drive on plain roads. And in the major highway being built, you just look over and go, man, that dirt really is red. I mean, it's just
yes.
like painted Oklahoma Sooner red or something over there. It does just blow my mind how it's the only place I know about, and anywhere I go around the country, where you got different colored dirt than what dirt is. You know, I haven't heard all the science. I know real estate. I don't know about that land, okay? I have no funny stories or crazy little tangents to tell you, but I noticed it today, Danny, and I thought exactly what you said. Can you imagine if you went out to do things, or your kids went out to play and they just got some dust and dirt on them? It would be red, staining red, you know?
Yes.
And
yes.
You confirmed that story that I was thinking about hours ago. It's funny how we kind of think a lot alike, or at least converge to some common areas, Danny. So you don't run anymore. You don't have to sit there in that hotel anymore. But that hotel where you sat, Danny, was one of the greatest preparation days I ever had. You know Jimmy Johnson, right? Pretty famous
yes.
guy. And when Oklahoma State plays Oklahoma, one of the big things is, how does Oklahoma always win? Does anybody ever win? Well,
that is Stan Weber, and, of course, he's on the road, so sometimes we probably are going to have a little time to reconnect with Stan as we get set. And we went on a couple of tangents there, and one of the things that that's probably a good thing concerning is the fact that yesterday was not a great day for the local football teams. And I think I've heard this story off the air before about Jimmy Johnson, and it is a very, very good story. And, of course, yesterday, the aforementioned Texas Longhorns, in a game that Stan, of course, called, beat Kansas State by a count of 22-17, and that was the final score, although maybe not as close as that. And Stan is back with us now. And, Stan, continue on with that Jimmy Johnson story, because it's
a
good one.
Well, first of all, I think the people of Oklahoma are mad at me for saying some bad stuff about him, and they just cut my cell phone coverage off. So we may have to deal with that until we get into this, where they may have more appreciation for me. But, you know, Jimmy Johnson didn't beat Oklahoma in his five chances to beat them. It's just amazing how Oklahoma State can have good teams, be favorite, and not get it done. But I was recruited by Jimmy Johnson, chose not to go to Oklahoma State, and then as a junior, I was the starting quarterback at OSU, and I stayed in that hotel. And I just remember, Danny, the magic of going to Oklahoma State and beating Jimmy Johnson. We won that day. I've only got one chance to drive the ball down the field in my college career, down with a chance to win the game with a touchdown. K-State down by six, 73 yards away from the goal line. I had one chance, Danny, and we drove down against Jimmy Johnson and beat him. And I just think about great connotations of those smells you're talking about in that hotel. I remember the night before inside the NFL. Remember old Lynn Dawson did
yes.
that show with Nick Bonacani? Well, rarely did I get to see that show on HBO. I just had no access to it. And at that hotel, you used to be leading edge, Danny, like one of the fanciest ones in the day, back in the day. And I sat there, and between meetings and stuff, we had a chance to be in our hotel room. And I watched that hour-long show with no commercials, poetry in motion, NFL players flying around in slow motion. And it's just so weird how I just felt a warm feeling like, man, let's go. I wanted to play some football and went out the next day and had one of the most significant wins I've ever been a part of, beat a very good Oklahoma State team on the road with a late drive to pull off the big upset. And now it all comes back full circle where I don't notice the smells that you did, Danny, because – when I drive by that hotel, I still go, yes, sir. That makes me feel so good. So I'm glad to get to – you always balance things out. That's what we do for each other. Like if I get too excited about something, you pull me back down to reality and say, well, maybe not so great. But hopefully today, great football, Danny. Great weather, great football. And I hope everyone has a great Thanksgiving week, shopping, doing whatever you're doing. You can take in a little football today or have them in this weekend. Join along with us because I got a big smile on my face again, not only because we talked about that hotel, but because it's an exciting day today.
Well, you mentioned driving down the field to win the game, and Kansas State did have a chance, although they didn't have much time to do it at the end, and they had a couple of chances late in the ball game yesterday. Let's break this one down. We have a lot of time to break down our games today, and, of course, we'll be talking a lot of Bedlam with Todd Lebo on the roundtable and a couple of other things as well. And it was an interesting game, Stan. Skylar Thompson couldn't play. And I'm going to start off with this, not a couple of the things that went on late. We'll get to those. But Kansas State obviously decided, which they do fairly often when Will Howard plays football, to run the ball, well, not exclusively, but way, way more than they pass it. And it just raises the question. Will Howard had an outstanding long touchdown run. He actually, none of his other runs really did very particularly much. Deuce Vaughn had a good game. 13 passes on the day. Is it just that Will Howard can operate the running attack well and he's a threat to run, or is he significantly challenged as a thrower and you're just not going to want to do that?
Well, that's a great question, Danny, and it's still one that I think is up in the air. K-State came into the season saying they'd like to control the game, run the football, and pass off of it. And what it turned out to be is that Skylar Thompson has started lighting it up and throwing the ball so well that K-State at times has 50-50 play calling, running and passing. And I think the opponents, I've been saying for a while, Danny, and you've heard me say it, I think the opponents would rather see K-State hand the ball off and run, even though Deuce Vaughn might be the running back there, than see him drop back and pass. K-State's really been efficient throwing the football with Skylar Thompson as a quarterback. So now you get to the end of the season, and you got to decide – is it a difference between Skylar Thompson and Will Howard? Do you believe Will Howard can't function and throw the football very well? Or do you feel like it's your initial strategy? Why not lean on it and play a low-scoring game and find a way to win at the end? You know, that's something that I think the K-State coaching staff is still trying to sort out. What they've done is gravitate toward running the football and not exposing Will Howard to the passing game. Remember, he was a starting quarterback against mm-hmm. Nevada. Nevada had an NFL quarterback and were favorites. And it was a hard-fought game, but K-State won, and I think they threw either 12 or 13 times that day against Nevada. But they had the lead most of the time. They got the job done. They got the win without Skylar Thompson. And you just wonder, well, they reverted back to it. They didn't run a lot of plays. They only had 48 offensive plays because they couldn't keep, you know, they allowed Texas to convert on third down. K-State was only 1 of 9 on third down, right. Danny, 0 of 2 on fourth down. All big stories in the game, but they ran only 48 plays. So when you take the number of passes. You got to factor that in. But still, they were leaning on the running game much more than the passing game. And, you know, I really don't have the answer for you because they've really not let Will Howard have the pressure of the game on him and throw the ball, right? I mean, we didn't see it yesterday, and we didn't see it against Nevada. And you can't go by what we saw last year because he's a much improved player from where he was last year. I think he's a much improved player since early in the year by Skylar Thompson throwing the football and the K-State offense having different plays and play calling. You know, they do some empty sets, put Deuce out as a wide receiver and throw the ball around the yard some. That all is still part of Will Howard's practice day, his mental preparation. His game readiness is built on the same stuff. So he's not like hidden in a room and say, you only get a look at this game plan. He's known the K-State game plan. But however we get to it, Danny, I think what we saw against Texas looked a lot like what we saw against Nevada. So I don't know if that's an indication from the coaching staff that they don't think Will Howard can get it done in a passing game and having more balance and more of the ball in his hands to throw. You know, I don't know. Or do they just feel like, hey, we had the lead in the ball game, 14-13. We had the lead 17-16. You know, until we got into the fourth quarter, K-State was still right where they wanted to be. So I can't sort out right now how much of it's game situation, few plays, or how much of it is we're not sure that Will Howard is ready to drop back and throw with the passes. And those are giant questions, right? Because not only are you talking about the times he started this year, three, but going into next season, there's going to be no Skylar Thompson. So, you know, I don't have a very good answer for you. I thought at times when he played this year that he looked comfortable in the passing game, that he's advanced himself. So I do not write off that he's not a good passer and he's only a running quarterback. I don't think that at all. But I don't think we've been given a chance to see him under pressure to see if he can do it. And that, what I don't know is I haven't heard the coaches say that they don't believe in him, that they need to do that to win. So I really can't tell yet. So it's a big question mark, and there's no doubt about it. When you go back and look at the game and all the ways you can split the hairs about how K-State could have won and didn't win and could have made plays. They had, you know, the fourth down misses in the fourth quarter. Two drives ended with fourth down misses. And they were third and one, right?
Yes.
Third and one and fourth and one and didn't get it. So big question marks about the play calling in those situations, the belief in Will Howard, can he throw the ball? Those are all things yet to be determined that I don't have a strong opinion on yet.
The other aspect that I thought of, too, first of all, Texas really frittered away chances to put this game completely away late, and Kansas State ended up with more and more chances that you just talked about. But I believe it was 2 out of 4, and then Texas did it too. It seems to me, if you have a quarterback like Will Howard, and for that matter, by like Casey Thompson, who actually was efficient, and Texas played with more emotion than I perhaps have thought as well, I don't quite understand the, you know, I think 2 out of the 4 plays on third and one or short and one, fourth and one for K-State were wildcat calls. If you got Will Howard and Deuce Vaughn, I don't quite understand the wildcat there, Stan.
Well, it's something that is a little new that K-State hasn't done a lot of. And, you know, we saw Texas use it a lot. And K-State said, okay, let's just get the ball to Deuce and get a fullback back there with him rather than not having a fullback. And I think that's maybe the choice that they had. I mean, you could also argue on the third and one situation, why didn't they think about quarterback sneaking it and not getting it to the fourth and one situations? Because if you go back, you know, you hate to gripe about the officials, but on the first one in their own territory, I thought Deuce Vaughn had the first down on the third down play. But you're on the road at Texas, you know, it close, you know, it's not something to count on. So they had to go back and do it again on fourth down. You know, at some point, I'm enough old school. I'm like, oh, why don't we just quarterback sneaking on third down? Because you know what the officials usually do when you're quarterback sneaking on third down nowadays? Like arena football, they just go, yeah, he made it, move the chains. Whenever you get to the fourth down call, it becomes more scary and dangerous. But, you know.
Well, the other aspect of this, Stan, and I wanted you to address this, and I don't want to forget it. What they still let you do, and we're old school enough to remember when this was a penalty, you can shove the quarterback forward. I mean, that happened 10 times yesterday in the game between the two teams. To me, that's got to go. When I watch it, I'm like, what is this, rugby? I mean, come on.
Oh, my. That's great, Danny. I love it because my daughter, who does not study football unless she's literally at the game, I get into the car and she's able to be at the game, and she goes, she brought up just what you did. Like, That is crazy. Why don't they blow the whistle? It looks like he stopped, and then they shove him five more yards forward. Why aren't they blowing the whistle? And I said, well, as long as he's still moving or inching forward, they'll let them push. And she just said, well, that rule needs to be out of here. So she's like you, Danny,
yes.
Going, this is crazy. We've turned football into rugby. And what people are – what Danny's saying, everyone, is it used to be a penalty
right.
for you to push your player. Like a running back that has the football, it was illegal to push him forward at any time.
Yep.
You couldn't help him. He had to make it on his own. Now part of Texas's strategy was to tell him to stay on your feet the best you can, and he's strong enough to, and then we'll get there in a second, and three or four of us will just shove the whole pile forward, and they gain, what, sometimes 10 yards.
Yes.
4 yards, 5 yards. And unfortunately, when you said that, Danny, that it happened 10 times in the game, it was either 9-1 or 10-0. All of it was Texas.
Right.
It wasn't K-State pushing Deuce Vaughn. You know, he was out in the open field. You know, one thing that I said on the broadcast, Danny, that I really believe is one of those things I felt really good about of explaining in a simplified manner for those who don't study football that intensely about this game was that Texas is big and strong along the front wall, very good along the front wall, but and hard to bust through. But when you do bust through, they have a soft middle. The linebackers are not tackling people. The safeties are not physical and tackling people. If you can gain 1 to 2 yards against Texas, the next five are like free and likely to be another five. You know, you either gain 1 against Texas or 10. And that is the story of Texas football this year. So, you know, after two plays, they gave up 5 yards per carry this year, but it wasn't five each time. It wasn't 4 and 6 and 3 and 7 and 5 and 5. No, it was 0-10. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, playing Texas, how many times did Deuce Vaughn, when he broke through, just have a free run for 10 or 11 yards? They had a 9-yard touchdown run where he was untouched once they turned that corner. So I was explaining it with Wyatt and saying, you know, there's a big orange wall that's hard to get through. But once you do, that's when you really get after Texas. Guess what third and fourth down plays are like? That's all about that wall, right? K-State could bust through that wall when it was third and fourth down. It's so hard when everybody knows the game situation. That's going to be a big fight at the line of scrimmage, and K-State couldn't win it. But that's really what defines Texas football. If you can get just in a normal rhythm going down the field, you're going to break through it. You're going to get yardage and demoralize them a little bit. But it just worked out so poorly for K-State that third and fourth down late in the game,
yes,
without a good passing game, like Skylar Thompson, you know what K-State would have done? They would have just thrown the ball on third and one.
Right, knowing that they could actually run it on fourth if they wanted to, right?
Yeah, exactly. And because it was open out there, right?
Yep.
So the question is, you know, if you're a play caller, Danny, it's third and one, and Will Howard's the quarterback, are you really going to say, I'm just going to throw the ball because I don't want to fight that front wall of Texas? Or are you going to say, I got two rushes, I ought to make 1 yard and two rushes accumulated?
Yep.
You can see how you can get sucked
into most
that,
football,
right?
Most football coaches are going to say, if we can't make 1 yard in two plays by running the football, we don't deserve the first down anyway. That's what football coaches would say. Let's wrap this up, and we'll look ahead to breaking down the Missouri game in depth coming up after the break. We went into this game, Stan, talking about this, and of course we do a podcast on Monday and we speak here, so we speak a lot, which is good, and we talk a lot about football. You basically went into this game because of Texas on a 6-game losing streak and all that, the longest since 1956, and that really, in the end, even though Texas is strong in the front, as you mentioned, good athletes, whatever, this was going to be disappointing if Kansas State lost the game. Now, they didn't have Skylar Thompson. They look ahead to a bowl game. Was it a disappointing day in the end?
Yeah, it was very disappointing. You have to factor in that both teams had a ton of injuries, but at the end of the day, they weren't equal in the fact that Texas was beat up, but they had their starting quarterback in case they didn't. You know, that's an easy way to talk about why the game might have gone differently. And if Skylar Thompson would have been there, K-State would have won. I feel very comfortable saying that. It would have been close and tough. But, yeah, it was very disappointing because you saw how even it was. I didn't think Texas would be blown away by K-State. I didn't think they'd lay down. And I think I told you that when you get to the end of the season and you got a losing team, the coaches lay off of you a little bit. The whole psychological issue of this probably is the last time we're going to put the uniform on together. This is senior day for 28 or so Texas Longhorns. Let's just go out and play. Plus, he had great connotations. They'd beaten K-State every time these guys got together. These players on the field, they have now beaten K-State five straight times. So there was great connotations for Texas. I thought they would play loose and free and give it a great shot. So I knew K-State would have a hard day, but at the end of it, you can still be disappointed because eight wins is such a great regular season. And beating Texas on the road would have been their third conference victory on the road. It would have been a great way to finish off the year, winning four of their last five and those kind of things, Danny. So, yes, it was very disappointing. And, you know, you led 17-16 at the half. You were right there in the ball game, less than a touchdown down. So all the game situations add to the misery of what it feels like. In that locker room for the K-State players, the coaching staff, the fans, everyone had a punch in the gut because it was a winnable game. It was harder without Skylar Thompson. It's still overall, if we step back and take a deep breath, it's Friday no longer. It's Saturday now. Danny, is the sun shining? You know, if you'd have started the year and said, hey, K-State's going to finish 7-5 this year, win a couple of road games, win at Stanford, beat Stanford in AT&T Stadium to start the year off, beat Nevada, beat KU, and have seven wins at the end of the year and finish fifth in the conference, upper half finish, I would have said that was fine. That would be a very nice year. So overall, we can step back and act like it was good, but the pains of yesterday's game are still there because you know what? Eight sounds a lot better. And beating Texas, for all those teams that are loving to hate Texas and Oklahoma more and more today, as Big 12 survivors now as we move on, all those things are in play. It might be the last time K-State plays Texas. Who knows if Texas goes to the SEC next year? All those things. Yeah, it was painful. It was disappointing. You got to win the games that you're, you know, equal with the other team, better, whatever you want to say. And so, yeah, it's definitely painful. There's not a big smile on K-State fans saying, hey, we're 7-5, fifth place in the Big 12. We're going to a bowl game. That's for later down the road. Maybe next week's show, if we do one, Danny, or, you know, on the podcast here in a couple weeks, I'll be able to reflect and say, great year, K-State. Good job. Now go win a bowl game. But today, it's a missed opportunity that if you're a competitor, you don't feel good about.
That's Dan Weber. He is, well, now 20 miles further away from Stillwater, Oklahoma, or so. And we will talk about the Missouri Tigers. They had a disappointing day as well. Kansas Jayhawks play later on. We'll preview that. We'll look at some of the big games of the day, including the showdown between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Bedlam, that will be part of our roundtable with Todd Lebo. That all coming your way next, right here on College Football Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Danny Klinkscale with you here from DannyKlinkscale.com and a variety of other things, and a chance for you to check out a little something new. If you like, go to any of my social media pages, be it my three Facebook pages, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, right now, and you can check out a chance to get some more direct communication with me and a texting platform. So enjoy that, and we'll maybe have some fun with that as well. Of course, I do all kinds of stuff at DannyKlinkscale.com and the Reasonably Irreverent podcast, including a podcast with Stan Weber, player personality profiles, music, movies, all kinds of great stuff. So check that out, if you wish, at my social media accounts right this minute. Well, speaking of social media, Stan, the Missouri Tigers are in a situation where if you watch Twitter during a Missouri Tigers game and they're struggling offensively, many of their fans think that it's been far too long that Eli Drinkwitz has decided to continue on and on and on with Connor Basilak as his quarterback. And yesterday, if you just look at statistics, and now he was under some serious duress, it was one bad day for Connor Basilak. 10 for 26, 65 yards, no touchdowns, one interception. Missouri hung in there for a while, but when Arkansas hit the gas, this game turned into a rout. This was not a good day for the Tigers. It wasn't a good day for Connor Basilak. And to me, it probably wasn't a good day for Eli Drinkwitz either.
Yes, you know, we've talked about right at that Tennessee game point where it seemed like everyone loved everything about Eli Drinkwitz in the media and the fans. And we presented on this show what happens if Tennessee happened to win. They whipped them. Now it's a little more of a roller coaster of emotions. Fans more able, it seems like, to express their opinion and ask questions about what is going on. It's been kind of new, but it's been the last half of the football season. And fortunately for the Tigers, they're bowl eligible, you know,
yes.
because they were on a slide that, man, if they wouldn't have beat a team like South Carolina, who has done some good things. South Carolina beat Florida, whipped Florida, right? Got Dan Mullen fired, lost to the Tigers, and went back and beat Auburn. Think about that. I mean, that's a nice win for Mizzou. People didn't think it was that big a deal, but that's a nice win, beating South Carolina. Now they're bowl eligible. Well, I'm sure glad that's the case, because now we at least get a chance to see them get some bowl practice, go out and see how they play in a bowl game against a non-SEC team, and try to put a little momentum together before next year. All those things are in play for Missouri because of the work they did a couple weeks ago. But early in the game, you just thought, okay, this is good. Missouri usually beats Arkansas in this rivalry on Friday after Thanksgiving, and maybe it's going to happen again today because they were making Arkansas struggle on offense. The Missouri offense is going to be leaning on the running game. We know it's going to take a little while to score, but that's fine. They're right there. But at some point, the floodgates opened, like you said, Danny, and it was all Arkansas. So at some point in the second half, you're going, Missouri's not going to win. And then you get back to what are the Tigers right now. And they are a team that leans on an unbelievable running game and running back. So you got Tyler Beatty, who is a senior, by the way, going for over 200 yards again. But the young guy, the one that's up and coming, and you're hoping that the established quarterback already in his second year starting and on his way from here on, is Connor Bazelak. And we've talked about his struggles, and it was in play again. The Missouri passing game, non-existent in the game. So it really gave him almost no chance to beat Arkansas when Arkansas finally woke up and started doing some things. So where are you going to go now, Danny? It's a giant question mark. Where is Eli Drinkwitz going to go? Does he look to the redshirt freshman Brady Cook? Does he go to the true freshman Tyler Macon? All those are in play. Who knows if those guys are up and ready to go? You saw Drew Locke get off to a slow start, I thought, at Mizzou, right? We talked a lot about this on the show. But he bounced back, and he didn't give up on himself. And he grew up and became more of a veteran quarterback, and then he made it all the way into the NFL and was a good quarterback for Mizzou when he ended. Is Connor Bazelak on that track? You know, it's not easy, Danny. You're going to have some sideways movements in your growth. It's not just straight up. And sometimes it's easier when you don't know what's going on. Like his freshman year, you just go out and play as a new coach. And then this year, starting to understand what the risks are out there, it can change how you play. So we don't know if Connor Bazelak is going to slide and be this quarterback the rest of time, or he's going to bounce back. We may not even know this year, but there are all kinds of questions. And then it brings into account, you know, where is Eli Drinkwitz's program right now? He said, I'm a great quarterback guy. I'm an offensive guy. We're going to get that part of it done. I'm going to call my plays. I'm going to be involved heavily. I'm not just going to be a head coach and hand things off. That's his philosophy. I believe that's a good philosophy to have. But right now, you know, it's always a lot of fun for him. And I was a little surprised, Danny, when after he beat Florida, and, you know, they had not done a lot of great things this year compared to what we thought they were going to do, but they did beat South Carolina. Then they did beat Florida. Then he came out and jabbed Dan Mullen at that time. You know, it's like with the stuff about the Halloween last year and may the force be with you with the Star Wars stuff. I thought, wow, that's a little aggressive. I know you have a lot of fun in the off season, but that doesn't play well unless you win ball games. And they did not have a good day yesterday at the end of the day against Arkansas. Credit Arkansas. What they've done with their program in the last two seasons is very impressive. But a lot of questions about Missouri starting at the quarterback position. I wonder how this is going to play out when they get ready for the bowl game.
Yeah, and the bowl game is there, and a lot of times you will see coaches try a variety of different things, maybe bring some new personnel in there, especially if you know, you're playing in a mid-level bowl and you want your seniors to go out with a win. It's not like this is an exhibition game or anything, but this is often a chance to try something a little bit new. But then if he does believe in Connor Bazelak and he does believe that he's his quarterback for the future, if you start rotating in another quarterback or, you know, start another quarterback or whatever, do you lose Connor Bazelak, especially in the context of where we are these days with the transfer portal?
Wow, you brought up just the giant new question in college football at the end. I'll try not to get caught up in that yet, Danny. We'll stick with Mizzou for a second. But all the things you mentioned, even without the transfer portal issue, are in play. When you have a guy who establishes himself as a starting quarterback as a freshman, and then he goes through the struggles that he's having right now, and reset his whole world by making him a backup quarterback and hope that he's going to end up being his full potential player. I just don't see that happening. It just doesn't work. I mean, he was off. Just think about offseason, Danny. When you're the quarterback on campus, it is an interesting phenomenon. You don't have a game this week, but, I mean, you are the big man on campus, and you start getting that aura and confidence building inside of you, not because you're cocky, because you've got to be a guy who's willing to bet on yourself, or you're not going to be the starting quarterback and have success. So after last year, Bazelak in the offseason saying, I'm going to, you know, 500 is not good enough. An upset over LSU is not good enough. A win in a shootout against Arkansas is not good enough. Let's take it to the next level. That's your mindset. You look at yourself. It's, you know, hey, head coach Eli Drinkwitz and the coaching staff are important, but me as a quarterback working with that head coach and offensive staff, I've got to set the tone for what we're going to do here in my sophomore year. All those things are fine, but you now are in a depth mindset that you can't go erase all that and say, oh, let's go back to starting point. Remember when you hadn't proven yourself as a starter yet when you came in and you were a freshman back in the 2020 season? Can you recreate that for us at the beginning of 2022 and just, you know, play great football? No, you can't. You can't have it where you're the big man on campus and all of a sudden they're saying, well, we're going to let the other guys be the starting quarterback unless you can reset and beat them back out. This is a hard call. This is when it really gets complicated for the head coach, because when you're projecting a quarterback who's playing the way he is, you've got to say there's obviously a possibility that when he didn't know what was going on last year and you're loving him up and you both were new to the program and you're playing an all-SEC schedule, you know, anything you do is good. You're only a freshman, and the offense was moving the ball. Is that the real Connor Bazelak, or is this the real one? And that occurred just because of the situation. And that's what you got to sort out, because if he is your guy and you know he's going to be the best quarterback for the Tigers next year, you got to stick with him. Show some guts, ride the ups and downs with him, and say we're going to be okay and we're going to come out of this. You know, John Elway struggled his first year with the Denver Broncos. Peyton Manning, I think they might have only won one game in Indianapolis the first year, but they said these guys are going to be fine, they're going to be great, and look at them, some of the greatest quarterbacking ever in the history of football by those two guys, Hall of Famers, Super Bowl champions, the whole nine yards. So Connor Bazelak, this is the hardest call for Eli Drinkwitz. You want fair competition, you want to see if your other two guys can play, but you need to be careful. That, then let's go to the last thing you said, Danny, and wow, for every team in the country, for every set of players, it doesn't matter if it's linebackers or quarterbacks, but especially quarterbacks, how you handle them can get things turned and spun in a different direction so fast you don't know what happens. Because if you say, Connor, we're going to let these other two guys, one of them get a shot and be the starter in a bowl game, the odds of Connor Bazelak just saying, I think I'll transfer, go up tremendously, because he'd end up sit out next year. He can be the starting quarterback next year. And he starts going, well, I've just been disrespected. You know, if you're not going to believe in me, I'm moving on. These players and their parents and their handlers never say, you know, you didn't play too well down the stretch. Go back and watch that tape against Arkansas, Connor. You know, you got some growth. Maybe stepping back will be okay. Stick with it, man. You can be our starting quarterback next year, no problem. But all those things are really what has to be sorted out by what is a, you know, quarterback guru type guy in Eli Drinkwitz. But, Danny, this is when it gets really hard. You mentioned it with Will Howard. You know, same thing. What's K-State's belief in Will Howard? How do they handle him? And the other quarterbacks that they have on Jaron Lewis and Rubley is on the roster as well. Everybody right now is walking on eggshells around the country, Danny, because we've seen players opt out before bowl games, right? That has become completely accepted. I mean, the nation doesn't even look down on players who say, you know, I'm not going to play in a bowl game. It used to be 10 years ago, people would be going crazy saying, where's your commitment to the team? Why don't you finish it out? You're a leader. What the heck are you talking about? Now, for any reason and for whatever reason, not just because of the NFL, but especially if you think you're an NFL player, everyone says, yeah, why would you play? You know, go ahead. Don't play in the bowl game. But now it's gone further than that, Danny. It could be, why don't I just transfer right now? Forget anything about the bowl game. I'm just out of here. I'm transferring. And those things are in play. We've had coaches fired, what, before the mid-year or right at the mid-year of the season? Coaches were falling over. We had a ton of openings. It's a whole new world. And we thought the reason why those teams said they were doing that is because they wanted to get a quick start on the next coach, right? They wanted to be the first in line, so they wanted to get rid of their coach, not wait till the end of the year, so they could recruit the next coach. Well, these players have the same mentality, Danny. They're going, you know what? If I'm going to transfer, I'm not going to wait until December 28th after my bowl game to transfer. Why don't I just do it right now and be on the leading edge? Because I think I'll be recruited harder and have more opportunities if I announce by December 1st, I'm out of here. So what is going to happen to the rosters here in the next 2 or 3 weeks? It hold your breath, because there are all different kinds of strategies. And if a coach pushes a button and creates a situation that pushes a player over the edge, when they're emotionally, the players are so emotional right now, Danny, at the end of the season, because they get a break, it's like the worst thing. They're not grinding into the next game. Now's the time to look at all their bruises and injuries and all the disrespect they may think the coach had. And then they talk to their parents and other people that are influential in their lives. And right now is such an emotional time to go, screw this university, I'm moving on. That is going to start happening right before our eyes, transfers and everything else. Here at Missouri, great example. How do you, Eli Drinkwitz, handle your quarterback situation right now? Because you may have a good or great quarterback right starting for you, or you might have an average to below quarterback, and you got to figure it out here in a quick manner to be careful how you handle things.
Stan Weber joins us on College Football Game Day, as we have done for over 20 years. And I'm Danny Klingscale. Todd Lebo joins us later. We'll talk some Kansas Jayhawks. They're trying to wrap up their season with continued momentum and maybe a third win. We'll check that out coming up next on College Football Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's College Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us on this beautiful Saturday. It will be beautiful in the evening in Lawrence, Kansas. It'll be dark by then. It'll be a night game as Kansas wraps up the season. And at this point in time, a couple of weeks ago, Stan, this would have been maybe a total afterthought. Nobody would really have cared at all, but Kansas has produced an upset victory over the Texas Longhorns and a fine performance against TCU. That on the back of a great game, a great first half against Oklahoma. Now, at that point in time, followed up by a disastrous performance against Oklahoma State. So at the end of the Oklahoma State game, I think that things were totally different. And now all the little things that Lance Leipold had been preaching delineated into two really fine performances, especially for a team that is banged up and has a lot of challenges to face. But between Jalen Daniels looking like a bona fide quarterback now and for the future and a lot of different things, tonight carries a little bit of excitement.
Yeah, it does. I wish it weren't a nighttime game. I wish it could have been played this afternoon with the sun out and really reflect the sunshine on the Kansas finish of the season, right? You actually said it. The Oklahoma game gave people some confidence, like, wait, look at this Kansas team. But then 35 second-half points, Todd Lebo will be on with this, and he's like, yeah, hey, do you realize Oklahoma just scored 35 in the second half? Then they couldn't move the ball against Oklahoma State, and it was here we go again, right? A spark against Oklahoma. We've seen it before, but Kansas still has a long, long ways to go. Meet me in 2022. And we'll see where the Jayhawks are. But one thing we got to take into account is how Oklahoma State's defense has stuffed everybody. It's part of the equation here, Danny. Sure, Kansas got shut out, couldn't get a first down, and all of those things. But do you realize what kind of defense that Oklahoma State is playing? They're almost shutting out teams now. This is flat-out 1960s stuff. So Kansas got into that realm, and therefore you'd say it's all over. They wanted to play against K-State. K-State held them down and won that game easily for the Cats 35-10. So you say, here we go. But KU is now up their game. Beating Texas was the confidence boost that they needed. And then since then, they have played high-level football and were every bit as good as TCU right down to the last seconds of the game. Jalen Daniels right now, Danny's completing almost 70% of his passes. 6 touchdowns, 1 interception. Does that sound like a good ratio for quarterbacks who – you know, are middle of the pack to better, right? I mean, this is not pretty good for KU. This is pretty good, period. Devin Neal running the ball well for Kansas. We said from the beginning of the year, he's built teams, has Lance Leipold. He knows what he's going to do. He's not going to be shaken off his path. He's not going to reach and take any shortcuts. He's done things before. And then it started out early in the year going, well, Kansas isn't dynamic. They're losing games by significant amounts. But I would be saying, well, you notice little hints, not big hints, but little hints that they haven't turned over the football. Okay, that doesn't mean you win the game. They haven't been getting penalized. Okay, that doesn't mean you win the game. But it's a nice place to start, because when your team starts playing better and you take away the dumb mistakes that you can kind of control, hold on to the football, throw the ball away from the defenders, make the right read, to do the safe things, all those things, Danny, are important, and no dumb penalties. So now Kansas is sitting there with a non-penalized type of team, a non-turnover type of team, and now with some excitement, able to make some plays on the offensive end, and they become a legitimate opponent. And you have to look no further than their game last week. That wasn't K-State on the field. That wasn't Oklahoma or Texas with KU playing out of their mind or their opponents overlooking them, right? None of that. We spoke to Jerry Kill last week, the interim head coach for TCU. We spoke to him before the game. He told us, Danny, without a doubt, he had the utmost respect for Lance Leipold and for KU football. TCU did not overlook them. They knew they were going to be in a fight, and still Kansas came back. Down in the late part of the game, they were behind two scores, came back, tied it up, and forced TCU to go win it one more time with a field goal. So a very impressive performance. This is the real version. This year, when everyone wanted to write off Kansas as being awful, not true, and Texas Tech as being just a bad ninth-place team, not true. Texas Tech's way better than that, so put them in the middle of the pack. Will they beat Baylor today? I wouldn't expect it. I think Baylor's good. They have a lot to play for. I don't think TCU's that good, but they're a legitimate team. I think now Kansas is a legitimate team. So you fold the bad teams in the Big 12 up toward the middle, and it's been an unbelievable year for parity in the middle. The excellence at the top, not as great as it's been before, but in the middle, there is really no low part. And Kansas can be now inserted with a bunch of teams' names saying, we're seeing a game between so-and-so and so-and-so in the Big 12. What would you expect? A close, hard-fought game. And guess what? Kansas has earned that. You know, it's Kansas versus TCU. It's Texas Tech versus West Virginia. All these type of games, really, you just kick it off like an NFL game and go, I expect a good game. Congratulations, KU. You absolutely are in that sentence right now. It's no giving you a benefit or bonus because you're the local team along with K-State and Missouri around here. It's not that. It's not charity, Danny. They deserve it. Therefore, they have a chance here at home against West Virginia. I happen to be tooting the horn for a long time that I think West Virginia is good. Deggie's a good quarterback. Letty Brown's a good running back. West Virginia is well coached by Neil Brown, and the defense is pretty tough. So I think West Virginia will be hard to beat for Kansas. But how interested will they be? Will they overlook KU at all? I don't know about that. If they do, they're going to lose. But if they respect Kansas, I'd expect West Virginia to hold on and win a close game. But this is big-time football. This is middle of the Big 12 pack type football. If West Virginia wins, they'll tie with K-State for upper-level fifth-place finish in the conference. That's how good West Virginia is, Danny. That's what they have to play for right now. Bowl eligibility as well. All these things that are important. We'll see, I think, a legitimate West Virginia team. But I expect KU to be right there with them because they've proven they're just another middle-of-the-road Big 12 team. And, man, is that a compliment compared to what you saw or heard when you were listening to that Oklahoma State first half and they couldn't get a first down. They didn't get a first down the whole first half. Is that right, Danny?
Yes, that's right. Middle of the third quarter.
Yeah, so but that's OSU, and watch what – just go back and look what they've done. I thought I saw something today that said that they're allowing only 13% third-down conversions in the last five games or something like that. That's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just shutting people down. Kansas got caught up into that. K-State was ready to play and beat them. But from the Oklahoma game on, they've been a different team with confirmation. So today will be a lot of fun. I think it'll be a hard-fought game. And, man, if they win – wow, Danny, if they beat West Virginia, that's a big-time win and add to their conference total, add to their win total for the year in a year where Lance Leipold, remember, in his non-con, this is not an easy year in a non-con. He had to go to Coastal Carolina earlier in the year. So this is just a very legitimate win total if he can get it done today, and I expect it to be close and exciting for everyone to watch if they're not watching the Oklahoma-Oklahoma State game or some of the other great games that are going to be on tonight at 6 o'clock. But Kansas deserves the recognition they're going to get for playing legitimate football.
And you're listening to College Football Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. And the other part, you know, we're talking about these little things that were indications along the way. And one thing that we probably didn't notice until it happened and he started playing was that I don't think anybody really noticed that Jalen Daniels was expected to be redshirted. All it looked like was that Kansas had a, you know, guy who transferred in from North Texas State who did some fun things and in their, you know, and his good performances was quite good. But then Daniels comes along and decides, yes, I will, you know, blow up my red shirt and play the last couple of games for you. And he plays really well. And in all the commentary that you're getting about it, it seems like the coaching staff knew what they had, and that's why they were redshirting him.
Yeah, I thought he did some exciting things at the end of last year, and I was able to study him very closely. He was a starting quarterback in Manhattan against K-State last year. So, you know, I really was excited about him. I'm not trying to at all bash Jason Bean because I thought he did fine bringing Kansas along. And I'm not writing him off even now if he wants to come back. You know, we can say Jalen Daniels is on a hot streak and playing well, but remember, just like Connor Bazelak and others, there's an up-and-down sequencing to this. So Jason Bean may end up beating out Jalen Daniels. I'm not signing off on that, but let's just stick with Daniels. He's got a spark about him. He's got a physicality and speed, and he's been able to throw on the run. And he's kind of got a winner mentality, right? He just says, why not? Why can't we win? Why can't we beat Texas? Why can't we drive down after Texas has scored and tied the game up? Why can't I make a two-point conversion when it's unlikely we're going to get it? All those things. That positiveness and his athletic ability really is a good combination. So they look like they have some quarterbacks, and if he's the guy, he looks like he can continue to grow. I think what was good about last year with very little good around COVID and college football was that they didn't make them use a year of eligibility last year. So this whole mindset of should we keep him for another year and his red shirt, I don't think that's as much of an issue.
Right.
Danny, to me, because he got a good year of playing last year. He's not going to get stolen from. And when you get your chance to play, with the way injuries occur and everything else and the ups and downs, just like Bazelak is, you know, going through a little bit of a slump, or Skylar Thompson's injured and missed a number of games last year and then missed three games or so this year. You just can't count on betting on the future, Danny. So I think it was a very easy decision. If you get a chance to be the starting quarterback at your university and you're been in a quarterback battle, go after it, man. Don't worry about burning a year of eligibility. Plus, you got to play a lot last year. Just go and enjoy, because you can still – 3 years is enough of good play after this. If he happens to hit it and turn into a very good quarterback, then great. You know, I don't think you're going to be sitting out there going, well, I wish I had another year to start. It really is awful when a guy could finally get his chance as, say, a fifth-year senior because there's another good quarterback around him, and then you burn his red shirt and you don't even get 1 year or 2 years. But the difference between 3 or 4 years after he's played a lot, I think this is an easy decision. I think they made the right decision. Go out and play. Establish yourself. Remember I talked to you about the swagger of walking around on campus in the off season when you're the starting quarterback, understanding the pressure of everyone looking at you a little differently, like, man, you've got a different level of responsibility. That's good. That's what he wants to establish, and that's why you go play. You don't redshirt and put questions in mind. You establish yourself today, especially if you beat West Virginia, then you know pressure's on you, development's on you, KU football's relying on you. Those are all great things to get you ready for the next year. Even during the offseason, you can improve as a quarterback, knowing the pressure of being the guy on campus who gets to walk around the KU basketball players. It's a little different at KU. You're not number one. You're number – how many guys do they suit up? Would you give it 10, 12, 15, Danny?
Yes, yes.
You're the 16th biggest man on campus at KU, the biggest man on campus at most places.
That is Stan Weber. We will talk around the nation and around the Big 12, and sort of combine those two with the Bedlam, which we'll talk about with Todd Lebo a little bit later on. A couple results from yesterday. Big games today, including the biggest one, which is Michigan and Ohio State on multiple levels. That comes your way next on College Football Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to College Football Game Day. It's going to be a beautiful Saturday, the best day of this stretch of weather, the warmest day. It'll be a nice, pretty nice day tomorrow as well. I'll be out covering the Sporting Kansas City game. Looking forward to that. That'll be right here on Sports Radio 810. Kansas coverage today of the American version of football will start at 4:30 for you. Let's check out a result or two from yesterday, Stan. I know that you always keep a keen eye on the Nebraska Cornhuskers because they have a lot of fans here. And what a conundrum there is for fans, for the athletic department, everything else. Nebraska's 1-8 in the Big Ten. I mean, that and this is multiple seasons in for Scott Frost. He's 3-8 under any other circumstance, any other person, you're fired. I'm sorry. But if you have faith that you've got the right guy and he's your guy and he's invested in Nebraska football, you can point to the fact that Nebraska now has 7 1-score losses this year. They were actually favored against 16th-ranked Iowa going into yesterday's game. They had the game won, just like they've had a lot of games this year, and then Iowa throws a 19-0 at them in the fourth quarter. What a strange evaluation to have for the Nebraska football program right now.
Yes, Scott Frost is just so fortunate right now that Trev Alberts has spoken earlier and stabilized the situation, saying we're bringing Scott Frost back. They've sorted all through that because this may be the straw that breaks the camel's back. Because it's not a straw. It's like the heaviest piece of steel on the camel's back, right? Did you see that game? Oh, my. They had Iowa beaten. They were better all day long, and the fans were into it. And Iowa's a legitimate team. They always find a way to beat Nebraska, right? But not this day. They are not as good as the Huskers. The Huskers control the game. And now if you just fast forward to the end result, Nebraska lost. And it's just amazing how painful that has been. You can say same script and all those kind of things, but it almost feels different because, yes, the whole year, I think they had 9 games in single-digit losses, Danny, which is the most since, I may have my year wrong, but let's just go with 1916, okay? Something like 1916, the last time a team in college football had 9 losses by single digits. You said by a score.
Yeah, seven by one score. Yeah, so.
Yeah, so either way, you turn on the tape, like I might watch football without the scoreboard lighting up the TV, not in game situation, no crowd noise, just football players, all 22, you might call it, just watching. Nebraska is not very much different than the teams that are going to win the West, okay? Wisconsin or Minnesota are going to play likely in the Big Ten championship game, and Nebraska is not much different than them if you watch them down after down. Defense pretty solid. It's just been a team that every time they get in a close game, they've lost. And now they're sitting on an unbelievably bad record. You think about KU. If they can beat today in a home game, if they can beat West Virginia, they're going to have the same number of wins as Nebraska does. So Trev Alberts, who knows a lot about Nebraska football, is a longtime athletic director at Omaha, right next door. He's been in the region. He played football for Nebraska. He has his finger on the pulse, even though he wasn't at Nebraska. Omaha didn't have football. So I think you got a guy who knows what's going on, who's been around the area, knows the tradition of Nebraska football, as well as where they are in modern times. He's the new AD, and he said, hey, Scott Frost is going to be our head coach. Scott Frost did a pretty honorable thing, Danny. He went in a contract negotiations and said, reduce my pay. Let's reduce my pay. You know? And so they both met in the middle, did some classy things, and said, let's go win some games next year. Now, are they going to make many adjustments with their assistant coaches? That'll be a thing. But if this wouldn't have all been decided, the backlash of Nebraska fans, which has already been enough this year, just distraught with what's going on, and Scott Frost has not gotten them to a bowl game, the whole time he's been there, after being undefeated at Central Florida, he thought the magic was back and they found the homegrown guy, the guy they love, that the head coach in the past would say, you know, he is going to get it done. When you think about Tom Osborne's stamp of approval, all those things and that love story were in place, and it hasn't happened. This year is worse than you ever could have imagined. And then they did it yesterday times 10. Because yesterday it wasn't just Nebraska doing stupid stuff all game long and then finding a way to lose. Yesterday they controlled the game. They were the better team. They were more physical. They had the game and then dumped it away with all kinds of things you can't do. How about giving up a block punt for a touchdown?
Mm-hmm.
How about throwing a pass from your end zone, giving a safety away on intentional grounding? Suddenly it piled up and looked like a coaching issue again at the end, didn't it, Danny? It's just all the bad luck plus the coaching. This time it wasn't Taylor Martinez, who is the weirdest example of a quarterback. He's been there like 72 years at Nebraska, who does a lot of great things and then unfortunately has the ball drop or something crazy happen at the end of the game. That's been a story of his career and this year's team. I cannot believe we're sitting there with the Huskers, 3-9, only one conference win. Wow, it happened again. Iowa finds a way to win, even in Lincoln. I guess they can hit the reset button next year and hopefully build on new quarterbacking, new athletic director. And if you played the season over, why wouldn't Nebraska be 6-6 or 7-5? I mean, there's just no doubt they have the ability to do that. So how can they find a way to get rid of the black cat walking across in front of them or whatever happened to Nebraska? They should be better than this. And fortunately, their coach doesn't have to worry about getting fired because it's already been decided. But, man, I could not believe it. As it was unfolding, when that block punt occurred, I go, Iowa's going to win. But until that block punt occurred, Danny, I was watching. I go, nope, Nebraska's got this. Iowa's so able to find a way to win, but not today. They can hardly get a first down. Nebraska's defense has control. They have a lead. I'm telling you, even I was surprised that Nebraska dumped that game to Iowa. Until that block punt, I thought there was no chance. And here we are. It was Iowa going away. If they had played another quarter, Iowa would have scored three more touchdowns. That's how much the game turned. Didn't you know it was over?
Yep.
Even though Nebraska moved down the field, did you ever think Nebraska was going to score a touchdown?
Did it
cross your mind? They were what, down to the 35?
No, it didn't cross my mind.
I said, yeah.
You don't win it now. You had your chance to win it. You're done.
Yeah, and then a excruciatingly long replay reviews, right? Two plays in a row. I don't know if you were watching, but
I did watch the game, yeah.
Nebraska was trying to get that first down. They thought they had a pass catch, and then they overturned it with one of the longest reviews I've ever seen. And then on the very next play, they called it incomplete, and then they had to go review it complete. So the views of the Nebraska fans just in shock in the stands. The TV guys had plenty of time to do it. It seemed like about 15 minutes of just looking at Nebraska fans in shock, like what the heck just happened. It was so painful. For those that hate Nebraska, you had a big day yesterday, okay? And there are plenty of people around here that don't have any time for Nebraska after what they did in the past, but amazing. So that was a big game, and I'm going to flip to the next game for you, okay, Danny?
All right.
Dave Doran, Bishop Miege, right? KU grad. Did you see North Carolina with Mac Brown and North Carolina State last night? NC State was at home playing better, whipping up on North Carolina. North Carolina State's trying to put a game together that puts them in position with a possible chance of playing in the ACC championship game for the first time. They got to beat their rival North Carolina, first of all, and then they've got to hope that Wake Forest can't get the job done against Boston College today. If that all occurs, they make the ACC championship. And by the way, Clemson's not going to be a part of it. It's going to be Pittsburgh versus either Wake Forest or North Carolina State. Now, that's if North Carolina State wins. But they got things under control. And then all of a sudden, North Carolina, Mac Brown, impose their will, jump all over NC State, and get ahead by two scores with 5 minutes left. Ugh. All the air out of the stadium's gone. The kind of shots I said with the red of Nebraska fans were there with North Carolina State. Same look on their faces, except for not as deep of pain because Nebraska is a whole different situation. But NC State blew their chance. Until with 2 minutes left, they came back and won. They threw a long pass for a touchdown that should have never happened. How do you let a big guy get behind you and have an easy 50-yard touchdown? How do you have an onside kick allowed to be recovered when your guy jumps out of the way of the ball? The North Carolina guy jumped out of the way of the ball rolling toward him because he didn't want it to touch him, so he let the North Carolina State guy recover it. The kicker recovers. They go down and score. NC State won the game. Run onto the field, celebrate. NC State's alive, Danny. Today, Dave Doran might, for the first time ever, have NC State into an ACC championship game if Wake Forest loses today. So I wanted to give you a little focus on a game people may not be watching very closely.
If Wake Forest, that was a cool finish.
NC State's back in. They each gave each other the game. I thought NC State has this. Oh, wait a second. North Carolina just stomps them. They have it. And Mack Brown's team gave it back. NC State won. What a roller coaster that was last night. And it is an important game for a local guy that we know, Dave Doran, a Bishop BH grad.
I'll tell you what, I was listening to a game a couple of weeks ago where this happened. I watched that game, or the highlights of that game yesterday as well. I think there are all kinds of guys on these special teams that don't know the rule. In the game I was listening to, I know it happened because even the announcers for the team that didn't do it right, you can, if you're on the receiving team, you can go across the line and catch the ball. I don't think that some of these guys know they can. I think they have to wait for it to go to 10 yards. No, that's the team that's kicking. You can go get it. And I think that's probably why this guy got out of the way of the ball, because he's like, well, I can't touch it until it goes 10 yards. Wrong. You can. You can catch it, and then the game's over, and you win.
Yeah. No, it's there's no doubt about it, Danny. They can play Madden all they want. They don't know the rules that well. And I know this for a fact because Mike Pereira, the famous guy, right? If you want to talk about rules interpreters, who's the guy everyone mentions? Mike Pereira. He's number one, right? And famously, I say, because on our show, when we were interviewing Mike Pereira one year, he talked about the video he sends out. Now, right on the air, I asked him, hey, will you send me that video? And you said, you heard him, Danny. He said, yes, I still get that video. So every week I get a video from Mike Pereira that he sends out. He's basically trying to send it out to the Fox TV people to get their announcers up to speed, you know. But anybody who can get their hands on it, like a coach, might watch it. There's so many intricacies to the rules, and many of them are on special teams, Danny. You know, there's things like, here's a couple just so you know. When the ball is kicked and the team that's kicking it can't touch it until it goes 10 yards. We all know that rule, okay? And like you said, the guys receiving the ball can get it whenever they want. They can go up 6 yards away, grab it, whatever. But did you know that the kicking team can't block the receiving team's guys until the ball has gone 10 yards?
Right.
So when you're running down and you're going to hit the other team, you got to be careful not to do that, or it's a penalty on you. There's just all these different rules. I know that these guys don't know the rules because, Danny, I am sitting there watching them, and I oftentimes am forwarding them to my two sons, who have special teams as their emphasis, okay? Landry playing and Stanton as an analyst at South Carolina. And I am sending them reminders to go, just in case you didn't know, here's another rule. You know, there's all kinds of things. Like on kickoffs, if one guy fair catches it over to the left, but the ball ends up going to the right and he catches it and he tries to run, the guy who threw up the fair catch signal threw it up for the whole team. So you can't return it. I mean, there's all these little rules. So if I'm giving my sons even more intricate versions of, hey, I don't know if you know this for sure, I know there's a big hole in the knowledge base of the regular players. They aren't spending their time, Danny. When they go away from the football facility, they're not worried about the rules. And there are a lot of crazy ones. So you're right. I mean, these players, the cutest one today, though, is there's a guy from, I think, Nigeria that's a star for Michigan, and he's just learning how to play football. And it's really cute because he just says, I just started playing football a couple years ago before I got to Michigan. I'm still trying to learn all the rules. When a coach said, you know, fire through the A gap or the B gap, he's like, can you say that a different way? He's like, yeah, go get the quarterback. So he says, this is a star player. I forget his name right now, but he's a star player for Michigan, okay? And he's so cute because he said, yeah, I'm still learning rules. Like the other day, I saw someone spike the ball, and I said, why did the quarterback just spike the ball? They said, to stop the clock at the end of the game. He goes, oh, okay, didn't know. These kids are 18 years old, 20 years old. They know about Madden and some of the NFL stuff, but they don't have time to study all these rules. So you're right, Danny. It's hilarious being a coach trying to tell all your guys everything they need to know.
Well, kudos to the announced team. I don't know whether, I think it was the play-by-play guy, but maybe it was the color man. On the K-State game yesterday, I didn't know that you couldn't spike the ball with under 3 seconds to go. I didn't know that was a rule. And
yeah.
So
that's right.
I learned that yesterday.
Were you listening to me, Danny?
No, I was watching TV at that point.
But I understand, but when K-State was running over to get the ball, you know, they were going to spike it. And then when it hit to the 3 seconds, I go, they can't spike anymore. They've got to run a play.
Well, I figured you'd be on it, Stan. That went without saying.
It's not a pro rule. It's just college.
Yeah, that's
just college.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
It's only college because they wanted to take the scorekeeper out of the game because there's a skepticism about the guy who sat up there for 30 years.
Right, running the clock.
Michigan State football, running the clock. You know, you can't rely on him to not push the button or push the button. So they just said, we're going to make this easy on everybody. If you snap the ball with 2 seconds left or 1 second left,
you got to run a play.
Game's over. That's your last play. If you do it 3 seconds left, you can spike it. And that's only a college rule recently. But there you go. That's one of the ones where, you know, Mike Pereira's film study, you know, about 10 to 15 minutes worth of plays every week helps remind me about these things. So,
that's
yeah, it's a three-second spot for college. Don't worry about it in the pros. You get there with 2 seconds or one and you spike it before it hits 000, they'll go back and say, yep, you got another play.
Not in college. And to wrap up this one, let's talk about the big game of the day. We'll be talking about the other one, Bedlam, with Todd Lebo as part of our roundtable coming up. Ohio State and Michigan, famously, Jim Harbaugh has lost to Ohio State 5 straight times. Only one of the games has even been competitive, average 19-point-per-game differential in this series. Sooner or later, he's got to win this game. Does it happen today?
I can't predict that, Danny.
No.
I'm rooting for
it. I agree.
Well, you know, gosh, what? Michigan's won only one out of the last 16 times they've played. It's 3,000-plus days and counting the last time Michigan beat Ohio State in football. Here's something that's very interesting, though. If you, as a traditional football fan, like certain games, not because you had a dog in the fight, you just learned to like them, I would say this Saturday, Danny, has been kind of special. I talked about Friday's Oklahoma versus Nebraska were awesome for the nation. Ohio State-Michigan was a big deal. I mean, I loved watching Woody Hayes and one of his famous lines of, Woody, why did you go for 2 points in that situation against the Wolverines? And he said, because I can't go for three. And the hatred that those teams had for each other. But they played big-time games. They're close. Both teams were playing for the Big Ten championship. You remember those days, Danny.
Oh, yeah.
Year after year after year. Well, here's what's amazing, to give that credit and find a little bit more love in today's game, because it's really hard to not believe Ohio State's going to win the game. I wish you could dream up a close game. I'm going to be rooting for it as a football fan, Danny. Nothing against Ohio State or for Jim Harbaugh. I just want to see a close game. But this today, these two teams are ranked in the top 5, I believe, in the country.
Yep.
This today will be the 24th time in the history of their rivalry that they will play as both ranked in the top 10.
That's amazing.
That's more than 1 out of 5, more than 20% of all Michigan-Ohio State games. Isn't that amazing?
It's
more than
really amazing.
Almost nearing 25% of all Michigan-Ohio State games have been games where they're ranked in the top 10. So the love we had for that game, being maybe because it was the only game they showed us on this weekend. You remember, we used to see USC and UCLA later in the day, but that was about it when there's only one or two games. But this game deserves that love. It's by far the most in any rivalry in the country where two teams have ranked in the top 10. So here we go. It's kind of like that, except for I don't think Ohio State has room to maneuver. With their loss earlier this year against Oregon, I think they're playing with a burning fire underneath their butt to be in the college football playoff. Not just to play Michigan, because that's already a big deal, right? But to make the college football playoff, they want to win, and they're playing at a high level. So I don't see Ohio State, their quarterback, may win the Heisman in a year where there's no Heisman candidate. Therefore, there's a lot of Heisman candidates. He may win the Heisman today as well. So I'm just scared. From a football fan, would love to see a close game. I'm just scared Ohio State's too motivated and good.
Yeah, and they're just gonna put a Michigan State on them.
Yeah. Oh wow, was that I didn't buy into Michigan State last week. I'm glad of that. But here we go. I hope it's not a blowout. I hope Michigan can keep it close there at home. But, man, I just keep turning my head around and watching football this year. And Michigan is much closer to Nebraska with just a lot better luck this year. Did you watch Michigan play Nebraska? Nebraska was a better team almost the whole game, and Michigan got a lucky fumble against Taylor Martinez and won the game. So I think Michigan just overachieved. Their record's better than their team. Ohio State's closer to the real deal. I'm rooting for close game, but I've never thought about Michigan upsetting them.
Right.
If they do, it'll be the first time, Danny. Maybe sometime during the game I'll text you and go, hey, Michigan's got a chance. But every time I thought about this week, the hype in my mind cannot get to my mouth. I keep saying Ohio State's going to win.
What a great line in this segment on Stan Weber. We'll be joined by Todd Lebo coming up. We'll talk Bedlam, and we'll talk about maybe if we get to it. With Bedlam's, I don't know. We'll see. There's another topic I have, but I don't know if we'll get to two. We'll check it out next on College Football Game Day. Welcome back to College Football Game Day on Sports Radio 810, WHB, Danny Klinkscale, and Stan Weber. Hope to be joined soon by Todd Lebo. I think Todd knew we were supposed to be on, but, hey, lack of communication has never been in short order here at Sports Radio 810, WHB. So, anyway, we hope to talk to Todd, but if not, we will have our own little roundtable with Stan Weber. And, Stan, let's start off with, and I think we may be joined by Todd here in a second. It's Bedlam. It's always fun. Oklahoma normally wins. We have a scenario that we want to avoid, I think, as football fans in general, which is, of course, that two teams play in the last game of the regular season, and then they play again in the championship game. Your general thoughts today, as Todd will join us next.
Well, I don't like those. The rematch in the Big 12 is always going to happen when you talk about a regular season
right.
into a championship game because that's just the way it's structured. I can deal with that. But, man, it's not as fun. And in the NFL, same thing. Teams play each other multiple times, two times if they're in a division, and could play a third time. But I don't like when it's the game right before it. So it's going to take a little way of the excitement in a championship game. Todd and I have talked about this before. It would not surprise us at all. If there was a scenario, if Baylor got upset by Texas Tech, that you could count on Oklahoma winning. Because that means, Oklahoma State winning. Because then Oklahoma State would win, get first place, but they'd have to play Oklahoma again. And the Sooners would be able to go ahead and beat them next week. But I don't like the matchup of being 2 weeks in a row. That takes away a little bit of the luster. But it'll be interesting to see, because I think OSU really is a legitimate team and has every right to think that they're better than Oklahoma. But the Sooners have magic, and they have explosibility. So it's going to be a very good game. I guess I have to root in general for saying I'd rather see Baylor play Oklahoma State next week so Oklahoma State can go ahead and win this game just to keep some kind of order. But nothing against Todd Lebo when I'm talking about this.
And the aforementioned Todd Lebo is here. And, Todd, just your general thoughts on another dose of Bedlam.
Well, it's a big one, obviously. There's a lot of things that's big for it. Maybe it's the last one. Probably not, but it could be the last one. It certainly could be the last time this game happens in Stillwater. There's a lot on the line. Oklahoma State's already in their first ever Big 12 title game. Now, they've won the Big 12, but they won it when there weren't title games, right? That little spot.
2011.
Missouri. Yeah, and Missouri and A&M left. They've done that, but they've never played in a title game, which is pretty amazing for a team that's really won a lot of games since Mike Gundy's been there. And they just, they were really at their best when they weren't available to win the title or go to the title game. So they're already in that. That's a big deal that they're in the title game. And Bedlam's always a big deal, and Oklahoma State's favored today, but they've been favored a few times in the past 15 years. They've only won twice with Mike Gundy there, but their defense is, I think, the best unit in the Big 12. Whether it's someone's offense
right.
or someone's defense or whatever, their defense is the best unit in the Big 12, and they'll have a chance to prove that today. They don't give up a lot of points. Now, Oklahoma has not scored points like they used to, but Oklahoma has won three games this year when they haven't gotten to 30, and that seems like something that would never have happened, a few years ago, right? Because they had to score 50 or 65 to win games. They've actually won games where they haven't gotten to 30 points. So they are a tough, gritty team. We'll see if they can get it done. But there's a lot on the line here. There's rumors circulating all around that Lincoln Riley's going to be off to LSU. So there's a lot of things in the backdrop today.
Well, just to follow up on that, Todd, what would be the motivation for him to go to LSU?
Well, talking to you at 10:40 in the morning, the day before, you know, our day of bedlam. The motivation is apparently, you know, most of these things you're seeing out there are things from, you know, TigerBait.com,
right.
LSU things, saying there's $12 million a year deal. So the motivation would be $12 million a year. That's the motivation. Other than that, you know, I think personally LSU is a place that has shown they will just fire you. I mean, Les Miles got fired in the middle of the year. Ed Orgeron got fired in the middle of the year. They both had rings. I mean, it's kind of that place. And Oklahoma is heading to the SEC, but I don't think they're going to be put in some sort of a pod with Alabama. The LSU job is a hard job, and winning there in that particular way the thing is designed right now is very difficult. They've also got some off-the-field things going down there. There's, you know, these investigations got Les Miles caught up in it. You know, there's trouble down there that doesn't exist right now at Oklahoma. So that's the bad side of it. The good side of it is, I mean, there's so many players right there, and you are, you know, you're LSU in the state of Louisiana, and everybody wants to go to school there when you're from Louisiana.
Yeah, and
a couple other things on that is that some people believe, I mean, national people, not just LSU people, that if Oklahoma is going to be in the SEC, the distinguishment of Oklahoma being a Big 12 versus LSU in the SEC goes away. You're just talking about, hey, you're in the SEC. And many people believe if you're in the SEC, you'd rather be at Alabama, Auburn, LSU, Florida. They put those names in real quickly like there's something magical about those places that they kind of disrespect Oklahoma. Something to keep in mind, he could get paid a lot more money, but just go back to what he's experiencing at Oklahoma. Lincoln Riley made the college football playoff every year until last year. Didn't get over the hump and make it to the final game, but people were thinking we have another Bob Stoops here and another Barry Switzer and everything's going well. But, Todd, if they lose today, this will be the second straight year in a row that Lincoln Riley's Oklahoma did not have the best record in the regular season. It was Iowa State who did last year, and it would be Oklahoma State this year. So I wonder if sometimes coaches say, you wear out your welcome. You know, even though it's your program and there's a lot of positives, there's a certain time to say, you know, maybe I need to move on. And that might also be tempting to him because whatever he's doing, recruiting, if it's defense not being good enough or whatever, that's kind of a trend line where Oklahoma fans might be on his back a little bit, or he may even wonder about the belief in being able to do it at Oklahoma. If they were to lose to Oklahoma State today, it's pretty amazing that for 2 years in a row, they wouldn't have the best record in a regular season, and only getting bailed out with a championship game last year got them. So I wonder if that is in his mind a little bit. You know, who knows?
I personally think the only thing – I don't think there's much in his mind about this. I think most of this is internet chatter. He's you know, I don't know the guy, right? He's not some friend of mine or anything. But he was given the keys to a Cadillac in 2016 in June. Oklahoma did not have a coaching search when Bob Stoops left. They just gave the job in one day. He was introduced at the same press conference that Bob Stoops left. This is the guy who was given the world, right? So I think there's a lot of loyalty there, and I don't think that is something where he's just going to throw it away.
All right, let's talk about it from just a pure football standpoint, and no better person than to analyze a football game. I guess the key question here, Stan, well, you can tell me what the key question is, but I'll try, is Oklahoma's offense good enough to get enough points up on the board to win the game, and how do they go about it against an incredibly stout Oklahoma State defense that's only seeming to get better as the season goes along?
Well, let's throw a little positiveness onto Oklahoma's chances right now, Danny, as we break this down, because I do think, again, if you go back just to football, take away the psychology and swagger that Oklahoma has, the kind of feeling at Oklahoma State when things don't go well, that here we go again. Todd's seen it. I mean, Mike Gundy and his staff and the team, they start folding and doing things that they don't normally do because they're a tough-minded team. When OU has good things happen, Oklahoma State goes, uh-oh, here we go again. Those things are all in play. But if you just go down to the field, Oklahoma State legitimately with their whole roster and how they play now that Jalen Warren's running the football for OSU, which allows Spencer Sanders to do things at his pace, to not have to throw the ball unless they want to throw the ball. I think Oklahoma State's the better team. But we got to be careful. Not only do we have Sooner magic and all that psychological stuff that matters in this game, Oklahoma, I think, has a path to victory that's very unique in the fact that I believe Oklahoma State is going to make it a low-scoring game. Their strength in defense will slow down Oklahoma's offense. But once Lincoln Riley accepts that and says, we are going to be in a low-scoring game, and because Oklahoma State's offense is probably going to play that way and be very willing to win 20-17 rather than 35-31, it's not a normal shootout, old-school Big 12 game at all, I think that brings out the best in Jalen Warren. I'll see what Todd thinks about what he believes with his quarterback, but I think his best skill is when he scrambles and runs. He's an exceptional running quarterback. He's dangerous when he runs. That doesn't mean he can't pass, but I don't buy in that he's just dominant quarterback throwing the ball around the yard. I think he's struggling and not much better than the guy that he replaced, Rattler, throwing the football. But because Oklahoma has patience in this game, they don't have to force things. Punts are okay. I think that makes Oklahoma dangerous, guys. What do you think, Todd? I just think Caleb Williams not having to light the scoreboard up, being able to scramble and run quarterback run game and have it come as it, you know, as it unfolds, take your chances. I think that gives Oklahoma a much better chance to win this game.
Well, that's what I kind of mentioned before. I mean, they 28-21 last week against Iowa State in a hard-fought game. It 23-16 or whatever it was against Nebraska, 16-13 against West Virginia. They have shown the ability to win those games this year, and that's not something that you would see them doing before. Caleb Williams has got to, I think you're right, scramble. Almost all of his best plays this year have been scrambles where he ran the ball and made a play, either running or throwing the ball. He has not been very good in the regular offense, like what you were used to seeing, Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray just stepping back, pop, 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 you know, firing the ball to somebody, and they run up the seam or something for 60 yards. They don't have many of the plays like that with him. I don't think he's reading the defense very well. I mean, he's a true freshman, all right? That happens. He's learning as he goes. But he is very good with his legs, but he has to protect the ball. That's key in all these things. You ask any Oklahoma State fan, the thing that's frustrated them the most about Spencer Sanders, their quarterback, is turnovers, being loose with the ball. You can't have those things in this game. Those plays will kill you in this game. It's going to be a hard-fought game. I don't see anyone blowing anyone out because Oklahoma State has blown some people out this year. There's no question. But they've also had some games like against K-State where they didn't score in the second half, right? You know, they kind of fallen apart in the second half. They had some really hard-fought games early. But I don't see a real path where Oklahoma is going to give up 45 points in this game unless they turn it over a whole bunch of times. And I certainly don't think Oklahoma State's going to give up 45 points in this game. That ain't happening. Their defense is too good. So I think you're right. It's going to be this kind of old-school, slog-it-out kind of fest. And if Oklahoma can play that way, it's kind of what we've seen with the Chiefs, right? When everyone was playing Patrick Mahomes a certain way, they just had to be patient and play that way. Plenty of my Sooner friends will tell you they should just run the ball 50 times today with, you know, zone read with Kennedy Brooks and, you know, Caleb Williams keeping the ball. That may be the way to go about doing it. Doesn't matter. It's the old, like what you've heard of the Chiefs a lot this year. It's not about the numbers. It's about the alphabet. And today, if what we think is going to happen in Waco happens, which is Baylor winning, all that matters for Oklahoma is the alphabet. Doesn't matter if it's 9-6. They got to find a way to win that game if they want to go play for the Big 12 title. Now, the whole psychology of the thing could change if there's a big upset in Waco. I don't think that's going to happen, but I don't think a lot of things are going to happen in college football, and we see them happen. So, you know, who knows what this game will feel like at 6:30. That'll be a really weird feeling if neither team has to win the game. Getting the Big 12 title. That would be super weird. Now, there's a real outside shot for both of them in the college football playoff, but that's probably unlikely, especially if Ohio State wins today. I mean, those things will all be handled by then. They're really on the outside looking into the playoff, both of them, even if they won out.
Well, that would be what is called in soccer terms and obviously in the terms of bridge, a dead rubber, a game that doesn't matter at all.
Right.
Let's finish up with something fun because I want to point people to that. There's a really funny and interesting article at ESPN.com about rushing the field this year And we only have about four minutes or so, I guess. Yeah, 5 minutes left. Here's a few examples. Actually, there's numbers there about how many fans rushing the field has happened. There's a psychologist on there. It's really a fun article. But here's some examples from this year of what has occurred. Fans of a previously winless UMass team rushed the field after the Minutemen beat winless UConn. TCU fans hopped the wall and celebrated a sixth win over Baylor in 7 years. Colorado fans celebrated their second win of the season over Oregon State. Kansas fans, of course, stormed the field after beating an FCS team, South Dakota, by 3 points. Last weekend, Cal fans celebrated on Stansford Field after they won over the 3-7 Cardinal. And a guy has even made a metric of ranking the reasons to storm the field, and he doesn't like it much, and a couple have actually local connections. Boston College rushing the field after beating Missouri, and, of course, the Kansas-South Dakota game there as well. It's fun. You know, we used to, you know, Kansas fans rushed the court once, and Roy Williams waved him off in basketball. Is this just something we shouldn't even worry about? You know, fan rushing the field protocol? I'll start with you, Todd.
Well, it's a little bit worrisome for safety reasons, right, like, you know, running over players and stuff like that. But I think if kids are in school and they're at the game, for crying out loud, they're trying to get kids to go to the game, right? They ought to rush the field. Now, they kind of pre-rushed, remember the game down in Waco a couple
right,
weeks ago
yes.
when they beat Oklahoma? And they shouldn't have rushed yet because the game wasn't over, and that caused some problems. In that case, I think the referees should just say, game's over. Why
right,
do we have
right.
to be perfect about this thing? But if I were a kid and we won a game and people wanted to go down there, I'd say go for it and have fun. But you got to be respectful. You can't touch people. You can't touch players. Certainly people on the other team don't get in their faces, because if you get something back, you probably deserve it at that point.
Stan, what do you think? We're a little more old school than many people would be. I think maybe there should be some kind of protocol involved. I don't know if you should rush the field when you just beat a winless team, but kids are having fun. They want to be on social media. What do you think, Stan?
Well, I think the theme of your story there is that it doesn't matter who you beat. It's your situation, right? I mean,
right.
It's not like, should you be going? It's, we just won, and I can't believe we won. So let's head out there. I think Todd hit it on the head. Right now we're at a point where getting people into the stadium, both pros and in college sports, football and basketball for college, to get them there and to stay. Because sometimes they'll come and they'll get kind of burned out and say, I've been out in the sun, I tailgated, I'm leaving in the third quarter, even if it's a close game or exciting game. All those things are in play. So to keep people there and interested, and if it's a fun thing and they enjoy it, I think I'm all for it. Let them have a good time. I think the one thing that becomes a little dangerous is if there's any physicality, because those players who just lost,
right,
I'm not worried about them getting hurt by people running into them, but I am worried about that Missouri-Nebraska situation where someone
yeah.
turns and waylays and lays out a fan, you know, and then you get into all the legal issues like, well, who was wrong, the fan for being there or the player for hitting them? Both, but, you know, that's the only thing I worry about. Otherwise, I think in a football field it's big enough, security does a good job of generally getting the players off. They have helmets and uniforms on. They're the biggest dudes. They can usually make it safely. So I don't have a big problem. But to show you how different it is nowadays, in the old days it used to be about tearing down the goalposts, okay?
Right.
So, I mean, when K-State first beat KU in 1994 in Lawrence, first time that Bill Snyder beat KU in Lawrence, K-State fans took the goalpost down.
Right, yes.
And so, you know, just running around your home team, not so bad. When the visitors start tearing down the goalpost, then you can get into the bad stuff. So
I remember
one
of the funny ones. In 98, I was at the K-State-Nebraska game with a sideline pass, right? So that was big. That meant something, right? K-State finally beat Nebraska. And they had the indestructible goalpost, but they turned out to be destructible. It just took more work.
It
right?
just took a it took down. A long time. I was at that game,
it was
too.
Real passion. Now, like, in, I guess 2013, I was on my football trip. We're at Oregon at Stanford. And Oregon was top five, and Stanford beat them. It was a Thursday night game. And it was the most orderly crowd rushing I ever saw. They didn't touch the goalpost. They just walked around and milled around. We went on the field. We're like, hey, we'll go down there. They made it an announcement. We have a game here next Saturday. Please exit the field in 20 minutes. And everybody did. It was just like, you know, I've been a part of a couple of weird
things. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. I do point people to the article. It's really a fun read. And we'll see if Kansas fans rush the field tonight if they get win number three against West Virginia. And coverage of that game starts at 4:30. Enjoy your college football Saturday. It's cranking up with big games all over the place in just a few minutes. Enjoy your college football Saturday.